Well, good morning, everybody. It is May 30th, and I ended the music a bit too abruptly there. Okay, it is May 30th. It's a Tuesday. I already made that mistake. It's not Monday. It's Tuesday. Okay, day after Memorial Day, gray and gloomy here in Maine, like it was yesterday, and cold and all that sort of stuff. But we're thrilled to have you with us today here on Education Talk Radio, Pre-K-12 edition. And we've got some great guests. I've been really looking forward to the show because my good buddy Maggie Salem is going to be on, and she's brought some folks with her, and I'll introduce them all in just a second. Just so you know, our schedule for the week is up over at education-talkradio.org. We change it every Saturday, and we send out a direct link on Twitter for this show and every show we do over at Twitter on EduTalk Radio. Please follow us over there. Hope you follow my guests as well. I'll give you their information in a few seconds. We archive all our shows over at the website, and we also do a second podcast for families and community regarding education. That's Education in America. Information for that at educationamericapodcast.com. And Maggie's going to be on in a couple of weeks talking about how families get involved in global education and language and all that. All right, and we got a lot to talk about. I got three guests here, so I'm just going to bring everybody on right now and introduce them as we go. First of all, who I think is in London, we have my buddy Maggie Salem. Hi, Maggie. It's Larry.
Hi, Larry. I'm not in London. I'm in Washington. Dreary, cold, wet Washington.
How unexciting. How unexciting.
Yes,
didn't you,
exactly.
I thought you wrote me last week. Didn't you tell me you were going to be in London for the next show. Yeah,
exactly.
Sorry.
Oxford, just to make it even, you know, because it's you, Larry. I can't do the show just from London. I have to go to Oxford.
That's right. Then I can't blame you. And please, I ask them to give me a doctorate if you don't mind. I'd really like that.
I'll put in a good word.
Yeah, so please do. My good buddy Maggie Salem from the Qatar. You like Qatar or Qatar, Maggie? The nation. Q-A-T-A-R.
It is. Qatar. Qatar's fine. Qatar.
Thank you, Qatar.
That's good.
But people hear it as C-U-T-T-E-R, and I want to make sure we know it's not the insect spray that we're talking about.
Yeah,
it's
I
the
was
nation
actually,
of.
I think someone was pretty excited to ask me if I was heading the foundation for the insect spray people, and they were disappointed when I told them I wasn't.
And if you do that, please come to Maine. We have all the insects in the world right in my backyard. It's absolutely unbelievable. That's where I am right now, everybody. I could go into Maggie's whole resume here. It's it's just an amazing resume. I love her dearly.
Friend
She's
of Larry
been on the
is
show.
Good enough for me, Larry.
Yeah, it's good enough. Maggie's smart. Let's just say that. And she is the executive director of the Qatar Foundation International. Tell us what that is, Maggie, before I bring on our other guests.
Sure. We focus on K-12 education, specifically Arabic language and Arab culture, classes and resources, also STEAM, STEM plus the arts, and youth engagement, connecting the kids in our communities in the Americas with their peers in Doha.
There you go. And it's great stuff. And by the way, Maggie did not mention that there's a big conference in November where Larry will be doing shows live at Worldwide Education Conference. Yeah, I heard from Adeline today. Okay, let me bring on our second guest, ladies first, Steve. So we'll go over to Peyton Chapman. Hi, Peyton. I'm Larry Jacobs.
Good morning, Larry.
Good morning to you, Peyton. You're the principal of Lincoln High School in Portland, Oregon?
I am, and it's 3 hours earlier here, 7:30 in the morning.
Oh, right. I forgot. Thank you for getting up so early. I appreciate that. It didn't even occur to me. I thank you. I really appreciate it. Are you awake? Are you awake the day after Memorial Day? Are you awake? It's hard.
I'm definitely awake. It's been a hard weekend here in Portland, so I'm definitely awake and worried.
Yeah,
and thinking,
are you referring to that terrible incident that took place on the train? Yeah. Portland's a friendly city in that man who stabbed those two people who came to the aid of some folks who were of the Islamic faith. Everybody knows that story, and he's going to be he was arrested. He's going to be indicted or whatever today, and not a good story. Portland is a much nicer city than that. Okay, we're not going to take Portland as that is an example of Portland, which is a friendly town, right?
Yeah.
Right, Peyton?
Well, we do have a lot of work to do. You know, predominantly white city. And, you know, again, it's a really good reason to support global education and thinking globally.
Exactly. You stole my next line. That's why it's so important. You're doing great things at Lincoln. We're going to talk about Lincoln High School for the past 11 years. And by the way, is school still in or are the kids done?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Until June 15th.
Okay. Everybody's winding down. All right. It's good luck in your finals, kids. The Lincoln High School, I think the Cardinals, right? Am I right? I saw that on your Twitter.
Yep.
Okay, go Cardinals. We'll move away from that lousy story. Steve, are you there?
I am here.
Well, I'm glad you're there. Steve Hargadon is the founder of Classroom 2.0. He's the co-founder of the Global Education Conference. Okay, is that the one I'm going to in Qatar, or is that a different one?
It is a different one.
Tell us about it, Steve Hargadon.
So the Global Education Conference is a massive online conference. We started it 8 years ago. The first year we had 450 sessions, 60 keynotes. It's what we call a collaborative open conference. So it's largely educators and students presenting to each other about globally connecting. We accept almost all presentations. We believe that the act of presenting is in and of itself a seminal moment for a lot of people. And because it's online, we can do that. It's held 24 hours a day. We have 25,000 previous registered attendees.
Wow.
So we have a nice, fun audience.
And, when is it, and where would they find it?
GlobalEducationConference.com. It's in November. It's held during International Education Week. And I don't know the exact dates this year, but I'll look them up so I'm prepared in a few minutes.
Well, do that, and it's only May, and people have plenty of time. And as we get closer, Steve, remind me, and I'd like to bring you on the show. We can talk about it to get people psyched up in October. How's that sound?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a really, really fun event. And the question is...
I will do that only if you're as much fun as a guest as Maggie always is.
I can't promise that. I cannot promise that.
Okay.
So the big question is, how many time zones are there?
How many time zones? Are you asking me seriously?
This is a serious question because it's a fun
24.
Question.
24.
How many?
24.
So, Maggie, do you know?
12.
Peyton, it's a trick question, but I'll give you a clue. Think of India.
I was
going to
say 9. It's so embarrassing.
Well, you think 12 because 24 because the 24 hours in a day and the world will be divided by 24. But a lot of quirky time zones. And so if you look at India or Kathmandu, you've got them on the half hour or the quarter hour. And in fact, we keep track of 36 time zones.
Oh, my Lord.
Wow.
36? Right, so seems impossible. Is someone going backwards while going forwards?
No. The schedule's listed in every time zone, so anybody in any part of the world can click on and see the schedule in their time zone.
Wow.
There you
that
go.
That is really cool.
GlobalEducationConference.com. Is that what we're doing? Is that it? Global
That is it.
Okay, cool. And by the way, Maggie is at QFI.org. Okay,
it
QFI.
Is.
Like, yeah, thank you, Mag. Okay, I appreciate that. You know, I want to ask you guys, and actually you just brought this up. I don't know if you guys know this. There was no real time zones in the United States until like 1895 or something. Everybody had their own time zone, which screwed up the train schedules. Okay? That was standardized, I think, in 1898 or something. Okay? There you go. There's another piece of trivia for you as we go on. But global education. Okay? And, Mags, I'm going to throw out these questions. You can kind of be my co-host.
Sure.
And anybody can answer them, but kind of throw them to Maggie. And if you can't answer them, Maggie, you can pass the buck to either Peyton or Steve. How's that sound?
Sure. That sounds good.
But I bet you can answer them, but we have guests, okay? That's why I'm saying that. Okay.
No, we should be nice.
Yeah, we should be nice, okay? Global education, that's what we're talking about. And Qatar Foundation is really involved in this. Obviously, Steve's really involved in this. Okay. By the way, is anybody going to ISTE, any of the three of you? The ISTE conference?
I think I'm
going to
try.
And you're going to be there, Steve?
I go every year and I run something called Hack Education, which is an all-day unconference the day before ISTE. And it's been going 11 years, and it's another kind of very community-driven event.
Cool. I love what you're doing. And I'll be there Sunday and Monday. We have to leave on Tuesday morning, so I'll only be there for one day. But I want to catch up with you guys in San Antonio at ISTE at the end of June, just so everybody knows that. And by the way, until we meet, as Maggie knows, I look just like Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, coincidence.
And Maggie is my Angelina. Maggie is my Angelina, just so.
Also applies to until we meet, yes.
Okay. Yes, I don't believe that for a second, Maggie. Okay, global education. Maggie, I'm going to throw this out to you. What does global education really mean? The goals, okay? And what are we trying to do, okay, with our students in this? And I wrote this in my tweet this morning, in this age of globalization. And by the way, Maggie's with the Qatar Foundation, all right? And, of course, last week, okay, President Trump was visited some of the and met with a lot of the Muslim countries, okay? And, you know, he's really reaching out to the Arab countries, it seems to me, okay? And so things are changing, all right? And, Maggie, what's this mean? What's global education mean these days?
Well, to me, and I definitely want to turn this over to both Peyton and Steve,
sure.
It means that we're actually respecting that kids, in many ways, are ahead of us in terms of their connection to the world, in terms of information they're receiving. They're globalized. They're on games, right? Video games, where they may be playing with someone who's sitting in Paris or Baghdad or somewhere else. They're not obviously interacting. They're playing a game. But they are part of a, you know, they're part of the 21st century, obviously, and in many ways more so than the schools that they go to. And so I think for me in particular, it's about finding ways to take the tools kids already use and connect them to the world and make those educational. So it's not saying that they don't already know how to be out and in the world. It's saying, well, wait a minute. Do you actually understand these other cultures that you may be casually coming in contact with? Do you know how to have good conversations across difference? Which particularly now and given what Portland's been through over the weekend is so important.
Terrible.
And, you know, how do you engage and what skills do you use? It's not just the technology tools. In fact, they're just part of the equation. It is a tool. It's what are we doing with those tools to help kids really learn, deepen the learning, but doing it in a way that they're already familiar with. So that's my answer. But Peyton, can I ask you to jump in?
Yeah, I agree. It's just really being able to engage students in dialogue and understanding other people's perspectives. So, you know, some people think, oh, it's about what foreign languages you offer or you're an international baccalaureate program versus an AP program. And it can't just be a program or a language. It's really a whole way of thinking. And it's getting kids engaged, actively engaged and thinking critically about the world around them. And we absolutely have to shift to that. I mean, you know, the opposite would be the 1950s, sit and get and lecture, and, you know, you had content skills, but you weren't really expected to apply them and certainly not to change the world or make it a better place. And that's what really motivates students today, I think.
Right. And let me ask you, Peyton, before I go over to Steve with that original question. I don't know if you've had a chance to absorb it yet or talk, but what's going on in your school regarding that terrible incident? And I'm asking that because the kids have to understand that just because someone is of the Islamic faith, you don't scream and yell and go nuts, obviously, and kill two people who come to there. You know, is this going to be a learning experience for the kids? I just want to ask that.
No, it'll add to the conversation. You know, we really have a host of classes, everything from IB 20th century history.
Right.
And modern world history, but also we've developed a really strong ethnic studies and then critical race studies and then cultural exploration pathway. So students have recently, for example, led Socratic seminars on topics like this, you know, to really deconstruct racism, white supremacy, and the impact on our community here, but, you know, also nationally and globally. So the kids actually are ahead of the adults, like Maggie said.
Yep, I agree.
So many ways. I mean, we have fantastic teachers who've worked on this curriculum, but certainly compared to where we were as students, these 16, 17-year-olds are really, they have the tools and the skills to lead these complicated conversations.
Yes, where I was when I was in school was being bored to death in language lab, the full extent of my global education, which was absolutely horrendous. Okay.
Right,
Steve,
right. And we've removed the language labs. They don't even exist anymore. They're all
smart move.
iPods and yeah.
I and my entire class, although Miss Tesler really tried in Spanish, I thank you for doing that. Okay. It's good. Steve, you talk about it. Global education. What's it really mean? When what are the goals for the way you see it?
It's a pretty complicated question, and So I was an exchange student in high school and lived in Brazil for a year with a Brazilian family. And even after a year of them kind of really shaking up my thinking about the world and the way that I saw it, based on having grown up in the United States, you still realize that you could live some decades in another country and still not fully understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways, there's this need for us to be aware of the variety and differences of the human experience, and also to know that we may not fully understand, and it may be years or decades later that we understand some of the things that were going on, but we have to be very careful. And so my co-chair for the Global Education Conference and I were invited to Paris this last year to go to a global.
Who is that?
It's Lucy Gray.
Okay.
The terrific.
Thank
Lucy
you.
Gray. And we went to Paris for a global education conference. And in Europe, because they live so close to each other with different cultures and different languages, for them, global education isn't about connecting students with students from other cultures or classes, but it's about how you act. It's really a global citizenship concept,
mm-hmm.
right? Which is how do you act as a citizen of your nation state and as a citizen of the world? Whereas we think of global education primarily as being connecting because
mm-hmm.
we do so little of it already. So for me, I think the big answer is it's a desire to have some kind of an awareness of other cultures, their beliefs, shared or not, and then to be building understanding across those cultures.
Right, and that's a great answer. Thanks, Steve. And, I saw that I was in Iceland a couple of weeks ago on vacation, and this little country up way in the North Atlantic, but they're more global, far more global than we are here. Okay, I just noticed it there, and I've been other places, and it's the same thing. They just get it. They understand that in here in the U.S., we're just lagging behind, and we got to do something. And on that note, Maggie, okay, you wrote me that you feel that global education has cycled through U.S. education. I'm not so sure that's true. Is it hotter now than it's ever been, Maggie?
I think it's a trend. And as we were discussing the topic for today's show, we were shooting emails around, and yeah. I'm struck by all the different terms. And unlike Peyton and Steve and you, Larry, I am not steeped in education. I am not an expert. When we were looking at starting QFI 8 years ago, you know, it was 21st century skills, global education, global competency. There's 4 C's. All of these are critical and important, and I don't know, to be honest with you, what's cycling through. I think Steve makes a really good point that, because the U.S. is the U.S. and how we are, to us, connecting with the world is a big deal. And in other places, it's not really about that. And I think Peyton striking on critical thinking
yeah.
is absolutely right, because you can do that critical thinking, again, unfortunately, as Portland demonstrated, in your own community. You can do that cross-cultural conversation, just turning to the person next to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons that I think I was trying to stress that technology is really just a tool, because it isn't just about connecting classrooms. I think that's a great visual, and I think it helps certain, maybe certain communities or teachers or schools understand it in a way that makes sense to them, because perhaps if you're sitting in a classroom in Oklahoma or in a more homogeneous community in other parts of the suburbs of the Midwest, perhaps, that global connection you may not have. But for many of us, it's there. I think Steve's
yeah.
right.
Yeah,
Steve. Of the issues that students are facing and that they're interested in, because you're trying to make it relevant, not just to the adults, or but to the
yeah.
kids. So the issues that they identify when they are going through that kind of a process to ask what their personal questions are and their local questions or global questions. But the themes that emerge are things like climate change or homelessness or immigration. So our students have done really cool things around global citizenship. I think they think in terms of citizenship, but they want to change the world around them. So For one example, our students created a nonprofit. It's called Mission Citizen. And they knew that they spoke several languages, and some of them had been on the Constitution team. They had these foundational skills around law and citizenship. So they reached out, and they have been now for 3 years tutoring adult immigrants to help them meet their naturalization tests, not just so they can pass the test, so they can become more actively involved citizens. So they learned the foundational skills they were given, and then they had this interest and passion in improving the world and helping other people, and created the nonprofit, and they're working with adults and teaching them, tutoring them. So it's just, you know, one example. But, you know, the other students in the IB geography class, they're really worried about climate change. They go down to our mayor's office. They testify for carbon reduction initiatives. They go to Salem. They connect with people around the globe, you know, just around ways that students can impact policy and practices. So, I mean, that's the new way of teaching and learning that really has to be relevant, has to be engaging. They have to be given those skills to lead those conversations and address the things that actually concern them. And those are global issues. I mean, climate change, immigration, those are global concerns.
They are. And by the way, Maggie, did you hear that? They love you so much in Oregon, they named their capital after you, Maggie Salem.
Oh, yeah, that's yeah. Thank you very much. That's I have to credit my my husband's family with that one.
There you go.
So, but Larry, I just want to jump on what Peyton said, because it's clear that maybe what the benefit of global education is to any community that engages in it is the interdisciplinary approach, because really I think it's not, and I think Peyton said it so eloquently, you're looking at different subjects, but you're looking at them in a different way. So different perspectives, ways of engaging, finding shared interests and passions and seeing how these connect, but not just in a single stream that you're looking at a particular history class or a science class. Often it's connecting those. And I think that that's an incredibly important part of global education when it's done well.
I couldn't agree. In fact, you just segued into the next question I wanted to ask. And Steve, pardon me, I'll get back to you in a second. I wanted to ask Peyton this. You were saying all those things, Peyton, and I'm an old social studies teacher, and I was thinking that the things you're saying, and again, Lincoln High School in Portland, Oregon, were kind of social studies things. And I was going to ask you about what Maggie just said by coincidence there. Is there an interdisciplinary approach to your global education there, or is it mostly lying in social studies, if I may? And I'm hoping your answer is interdisciplinary.
Yes, it is. And what makes it, I think, really easy is the International Baccalaureate program. So 80% of our kids take one or more IB classes, and 25% of the students, you know, tend to do the full IB diploma. And that really, IB really looks at the whole student with theory of knowledge at the center. And but our teachers are very collaborative. So they are aligning a lot of their work. They're creating. They're really innovative. I mean, I would say our faculty are hired, you know, with a team of people to be collaborative, innovative, and look at ways that the students can actually apply the skills they're learning to impact the world around them. Those three things kind of guide our hiring and our teaching and learning and our conversations. So, I mean, there are new classes being created right now. I was working over the weekend with two student leaders and a teacher, and the students were proposing a new course where the students in the course identify a global or local issue that they want to solve. They create either a PAC or a nonprofit or some other structure, and then they spend their first semester researching those issues and interviewing people and you know, doing labs or whatever it takes. We have students who go up to OHSU, Oregon Health Sciences University. They're doing cancer research, nuclear research out in the Dow. So we have different students doing different things.
Wow.
And then the second semester, they would actually be using whatever structure they created to do their citizenship, to help solve those issues, and presenting them to the local community, the school board, the mayor's office, the city councilman. And what they proposed was to be a class taught by students with a teacher of record, because, you know, we need to have that in order to meet our teacher's contract. And they saw this happen with a class 2 years ago that was created called Math Connections, where they looked around them, identified a problem, and then used mathematical thinking to solve the problem. So it was citizenship, which sounds social studies, but it was also mathematical. certainly in this new class they've proposed, which I hope we can approve over the next 2 weeks, they'll be writing, they'll be researching, they'll be advocating, and depending on the topic, you know, some will pick more sciencey math topics or that lend themselves to that. But they're still going to have to do humanities work around the creative thinking and the advocacy and the writing and the communication. And certainly they'll have to be collaborating, you know, whether you set up a nonprofit board or a political action committee, which we had another student do. You know, they have to do those four C's. I mean, they have to collaborate and they have to communicate and they have to be creative about their identification of problems and solutions. And then they have to, you know, create kind of curriculum that go along with it when they're teaching others.
I love it. Can I go to Lincoln High School and get another high school diploma?
I know. I want to go back to school.
That's why I'm not leaving.
Yeah. It's
years.
Unbelievable.
It's such fantastic.
Yeah, it's so
good.
You know, and I have to say something. You know, there's so much teacher bashing and education bashing out there. And I deal with folks like you, Peyton, all the time, you know, on the air here. Folks who are just great educators and your team and your staff, your faculty. Okay. And if I wish more people, we get a lot of listeners, but not enough, obviously. And we have a tremendous amount of listeners, but not enough to get the point across how good educators are. Okay, and how good education is and what you're trying to do and trying to change, which brings me to my next question. Okay, Steve Hargadorn, okay, where is global education now from your point of view? Is it just like Maggie called it a trend? Okay, I hope it's not a trend because, you know, it's a short ride to everywhere on the planet via an airplane. Where is it now and where do teachers see it now? You know, school districts, that type of thing. Steve.
So I'll answer quickly because I'm probably not the best one to answer this question, but I was the one who submitted the cycling question because running the Global Education Conference, we've noticed that there were people in the 70s and 80s who produced really good material on kind of global awareness and who felt as that cycle, this global education sort of has come back into being an active topic, felt like they were kind of ignored, right? Like there was the sort of the new set of players and everybody interested in talking about global, but they weren't recognizing that there had been a lot of good work done before. And I spent a little bit of time on this and I sort of came to the conclusion that this happens a fair amount, like self-directed learning is kind of coming back into vogue as a topic. And again, in the 70s, there was a lot of work on self-directed learning.
Sure.
And it's just kind of the nature of things. But to give at least a little bit of perspective, we recognize that there's a little bit of irony in Americans running a conference on global education. and right. And
pardon me. You got me with a laugh there. You are exactly right. Go ahead, please.
The world is a complicated place, and the role of the United States as a superpower has not always been positive. And so some of the questions that come up in global education are actually really hard questions. And that, plus the combination of not being a part of standardized curricular expectations or standardized testing or college admissions, we think we have a lot of people in our network of 25,000 teachers, but that's a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, it is.
And so
it is,
as exciting as it is, and as much as we love what we're doing and as much as we work on it, I can tell you that almost every nonprofit in our space is struggling. And it's just because it's difficult to get funding, it's difficult to get attention, and we recognize global as an extremely important issue. And Peyton aside, most schools don't really know how to do it. They don't have adults who are very globally connected or oriented. And it's not a part of the expectations for their very packed days. So my answer would be we think it's more visible than it is.
What do you think
about
it, Meg?
I agree with that completely.
Thank you, Peyton. Maggie,
yeah.
What do you think? Meg?
No, I completely agree. And, you know, I appreciated your shout out to the education system. I would be even more specific and say the public and public charter schools, because I think that it is very difficult to both run a school like Peyton does, to teach as change happens. I see global ed as a way to help the classroom catch up to the kids, but do it in a way that educates them. It's not just a connection on Snapchat or Instagram or Twitter or a video game that they happen to randomly be connecting with kids around the world. It's in a real way. And I don't know, this is my shorthand for it. I have four kids, and that's my educational experience before coming to QFI and running QFI. So I've had a lot of experience in schools and with very different children. And, you know, I feel for the teachers and schools trying to catch up. And I think we talk about this a lot, let's take this outside the global ed frame, about school in general. How does school become more relevant? And to me, global ed is one way that it does that. But again, it's also connected to other things like, you know, P21, Skills for Tomorrow, which, and P21 does the four C's, and, you know, Steve and I and Peyton know of their work and think highly of it. It's Participate and the work they're trying to do to bring in educators from other countries to put them in classrooms. You know, if you can't bring Muhammad to the mountain, bring the mountain. You know, there's all different approaches.
Yeah, bring the mountain to Muhammad.
Yeah,
forgot the end.
So
you forgot the end.
And, you know, to be honest with you, Gutter Foundation did that. It started 20 years ago with bringing universities to the Middle East, because if it's hard to take, in particular, girls from conservative families outside the country, why not bring the education to them? And that's a pretty bold proposition. And I think in many ways, when it's done well, global education is too.
Well, you know, I got to say something here. And Peyton, you're obviously a terrific principal and terrific educator. Okay, and you don't have to get a swelled head from all this, but it's all sincere. Okay, and you're doing a great job. But it's interesting when you say how, you know, global education might be a trend and all that, since I don't remember the exact year for my old education courses, but from 1860 or so, whenever, on, schools were developed, public schools, to put people into an industrial system. Okay, at 18, boom, you go to work in the coal mine or at Bethlehem Steel or whatever the case may be, and you stay there the rest of your life. That's obviously has changed, and everybody knows that's changed. And we got to get away from this trend thing regarding globalization, because that's the way of the world now. Okay, as I said before, it's nothing to hop on a jet and fly like I'm going to do to Qatar. Okay, and a friend of mine, Michelle Borba, just wrote me today. She's in education. She's going to UAE at the end of the week, United Arab Emirates, for some kind of meeting or something. All right, and what you're doing is exactly what we need to do across the board. It can't be a trend anymore, because the world is, Tom Friedman said, the earth is flat. Okay. And the world is smaller. It's a little blue marble. And this is where we are. You're doing the exact right thing, Peyton. You're changing education for the world we live in today and making it relevant. And that's really what global education is about. Peyton, can you agree with me on that?
I completely agree with you, and you also raised the context a little while ago that there's a lot of teacher bashing out there, and someone else mentioned tests. I mean, I don't think that our policy leaders are modeling a global education philosophy or framework. So, you know, you look at a country like Finland, and I mean, that's just an easy one because so many people have researched it, but, you know, get some of the best outcomes in the world. But they have teacher unions. But they, you know, they don't evaluate their teachers formally. They have teachers work in teams. They collaborate. You know, they're not testing the kids every year from third grade on, so the teachers aren't gearing up for these test scores. So all the political pressure in our country is actually going to make global ed just a trend or pull back even more, because we're not talking about assessing creativity and collaboration and communication. And we're not talking about evaluating teachers based on how relevant and how they're working with the students to empower the students. You know, what are they doing to empower students, not prepare them for the test? Because if students get empowered, then they really will do the things that we're doing at Lincoln, because that's what the teachers are doing. They're empowering the kids to be problem solvers and to identify problems. So I just think the whole context in our country is making it more likely that this will be a trend that, you know, maybe cycles through a little bit and but doesn't last, because the more focus we have on accountability and test scores and evaluations of teachers, we'll get farther and farther away from agency of teachers. And teachers need to model agency and creativity and collaboration so that the kids can see that it's okay to do that too. So I'm worried about the bigger context.
Yeah, and by the way, if we don't stop education bashing and teacher bashing, we're not going to have teachers. There's a real shortage out there. Okay?
Yeah,
which actually makes...
Yeah,
it's a mess.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, it may bring in teachers from other countries like they did with nurses a few years ago and engineers. Okay? And that might solve the problem, help solve the challenge right there. Maggie, let me ask you, and I do want to cover this. We got about 6-7 minutes left. Mag, put all this in context with what you do at QFI, the Qatar Foundation.
Well, I mean, what we've done since the beginning is find ways to not only help kids learn Arabic, working with schools like Lincoln in Portland, actually beyond Lincoln, West Sylvan as well.
Is that Oregon?
Wait, is that
Oregon?
Yeah, that's in Portland.
Okay.
It's one of the feeder schools for Lincoln.
Okay, cool.
So we thought, you know, Arabic's great. It's a language, and it's a language like French or Spanish or Chinese. What more can we do? It's not enough, and I think Peyton was saying this earlier at the beginning of the show. You know, you don't want to just look at foreign language. What is it about the foreign language that's contributing to a kid's life? I think that if we look at what are we delivering for the kids and what we're giving them, these tools, and the integration of the tools to make it more like real life, which the kids are pretty well aware of. You know, we don't go to work.
Is real life.
And somebody said, well, here's your math problem today. Sit down with the math problem. Now I'm going to give you a history problem next. No, you know, you deal with problems as they come. So the interdisciplinary approach is something that we've embraced from the beginning. So that's how we added on, let's talk about culture. You can't have language without culture. And then what unites every country in the world? It's a need for more science, technology, engineering, and math. Students and professionals. So we thought, hey, this is great. Let's focus on that. And let's look at the global challenges, like Peyton was saying, climate change and others. And then last, youth engagement. And that's where we talk about service learning, giving back. It's not just about what someone does for you. You have to pay it forward. And to me, that is global education, and I've embraced it.
I love it. You know, We really have to do something about this and just really do it right, because it's just so darn important. And by the way, you can get in touch with Maggie, okay? It's QFI.org. Is that right, Mag? They can find you there.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, I don't actually know this. Does QFI have a curriculum that teaches in schools?
No, not at all.
Okay.
No. We have a site called Arabic Al-Masdar.
You're breaking up a little.
So Arabic,
A-L-M-A-S-D-A-R.
So ArabicAlmasdar.org is a site that has mainly but not exclusively open education resources that teachers create, not us. We don't create any curricular material. It just, you know, keeps us out of a host of problems. And we find that teachers have been creating this, especially for Arabic and Arab culture, because there are no textbooks. We're partnering with Georgetown University Press, and in the next 6 months, the first high school Arabic textbook, it was done by Georgetown and three American teachers, not by us. We're supporting it with video and photos and other resources that are aligned to the work that they've done. So, no, curriculum, not our thing.
Okay, cool. I just wanted to make clear. Yes, of course.
I did say that it's not just about a language or an international baccalaureate program, but language, it does help, language and culture. So adding the Arabic program in partnership with QFI has really been transformative at our school. And for several, I mean, give a lot of recent examples, but also they've helped us hire great teachers. You know, we are in communication with the Education Trust, it's a Muslim Education Trust, nearby, just in terms of understanding different people's perspectives and ideas, because that's the whole IB mission statement, that, you know, different people with their differing experiences and perspectives can sometimes both be right to create a more just and peaceful world. But Arabic, we've been able to hire the last two teachers have been native speakers.
Good.
They've
cool.
lived, you know, they're from, you know, Jordan or, but, and when, for example, the president was elected and there was a travel ban, and our teacher felt like she wasn't going to be able to travel home to see family or come back freely. You know, the students, you know, were part of that, thinking critically about her experience. Our teachers never politicize the kids, but, you know, they look at real-world issues and the students lead the discussions. And, you know, even just adding Arabic, it was a pretty smooth transition. And then, you know, we had an issue with a band that, you know, an Arab-Israeli band that we brought over. And then we were talking with the Jewish Federation, and we were talking with the families, and we were talking with the school board, and we were talking, you know, students were deconstructing that conflict, and they had looked at the, you know, they've done a Middle East role play in their ninth grade modern world history class, where students were taking the role of Hamas and the Israeli prime minister and trying to find a solution. So, you know, these kinds of conversations become very real in your school here in the United States when you have different cultures represented, when your teachers are from different parts of the world, when the students are given access to thinking critically about the issues in different parts of the world. So it's been incredible. Partner, QFI has just been an incredible partner, as has the Confucius Institute. We added Mandarin. So I honestly, one of the drives, and this isn't global ed in terms of practices or the umbrella term, but really everybody should have access to a second language by first grade, you know, that just to bring us up to international standards. You know, it's really not no child left behind, but the entire U.S. left behind. That's been the problem.
Hear, hear. Steve, I literally have 3 minutes and 33 seconds left. Take up one or two of them. I want to ask you something. Teacher training. Okay. You're dealing with 25,000 teachers, but with the schools that train teachers, are they dealing with this change from an industrial to a global education system, so to speak?
We have a number of teacher training programs that have let us know that they use our recordings from the last 8 years for some of their classes. So I think that there's good work being done. I think what Classroom 2.0, which was one of the first modern social networks in education, and the Global Education Conference have done, in some part, not exclusively, but we were part of a movement that helped recognize that teachers are often their own best PD. So when Classroom 2.0 got started, social networking was seen as a very negative thing, and we had to really reframe and understand that teachers wanted to connect with other teachers, and they wanted to learn from each other, and they wanted to share ideas. And so I think that's one really huge theme in the last 10 years is the peer-to-peer learning of teachers.
Yeah,
and
here.
And that's where we sort of pin our hopes, which is this is a conference for teachers and students, by teachers and students. We actually now have a global student conference we hold in the early winter, which is just run by students. And with the same idea that that a lot of PD is moving toward the kind of peer-to-peer model, and that that's really healthy.
Look, I agree with you. It's very healthy. I could go on forever. I got to cut you all off. I'm running out of time here. Maggie Salem, thank you. You brought great guests with
you. Thank
you, Larry. Wonderful you.
I'm lucky to have good friends. So thanks, Larry.
Yeah, you make your own luck. I got to tell you, it's no surprise to me. Peyton, you're welcome to come back on. Steve, I'm going to email you. We're going to get a show together for your conference, okay, in October. And Peyton, you come on, bring kids with you. We can talk about all this. It'll be great in the new year. And Mags, you're coming on in a couple of weeks. Okay, so thank all three of you. I got to run.
Thank you.
Thanks, Larry.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a good day. It's Tuesday. Bye-bye. Keep telling everybody it's Tuesday. Okay, I got about a minute left here. We're going to archive this show, which is an important show, at education-talkradio.org. Check out QFI.org, Qatar Foundation International. You can learn more about Steve at learningrevolution.com, and he's at stevehargadon, just like it's spelled, .com. And good luck to the Cardinals. School's winding down. They got a lot to talk about this week in Portland. My name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks, Maggie. Thanks, Steve. Thanks, Peyton. And thank you for listening.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.